Heavenly Father, we proclaim that together this morning. We proclaim you as our King, our mighty warrior, that your reign is forever and ever. We praise you this morning. We worship you this morning. We pray all this in your Son's strong name. Amen. You may be seated. Today we're doing things a little bit differently than maybe you're used to. But as a part of our 28 days of prayer, to this next week that we're looking at is the Lord's purpose. And we're going to be looking at the Lord's purpose through a story that's found in the New Testament in John chapter 2. And we're going to hear the story from the perspective of the writer of that gospel, from John. So I'm going to read the passage from John chapter 2 if you want to follow along. Verses 1 to 11. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 80 to 120 liters. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him.
Oh, hi. I'm John. I come to you today from Patmos. I'm sure you're wondering, where's Patmos? Well, it's an island off the west coast of, I think you call it Turkey. And you might think it's some tropical paradise, but I'm just taking a break from what it's really for. See, it's an island of exile. That's where Rome sent their dangerous prisoners and political dissidents. I look like anything but a dangerous prisoner, right? Yeah, I was a political dissident. I'll get to that. I had been at a church on the west coast of what you call Turkey, a church called Ephesus, and Rome didn't like what I didn't do there. But I'm here to tell you more about my early years when I was much younger. The best years. There was those 2.5 or so with Jesus. I got to be with him. I got to walk with him as he talked, as he did what he did. And I just missed so much, though. I had so much to learn. I was so busy fighting with my brother John and Peter about who's going to be the greatest. I thought it was so important. Well, then I witnessed his crucifixion. I saw him alive. Now I know he's God. I know, and I've given my life to letting people know who Jesus is and why he came. That's why I was at Ephesus. Paul started that church. It was a good church. They had their issues. But they kept to the truth, and that's why I'm here on Patmos. You see, Rome tolerated most religions. They just wanted to make sure across the empire that you acknowledge Caesar as Lord. So once a year you had to go to the statue of Caesar and give a pinch of incense and say, "Caesar is Lord." Caesar didn't die on a cross. Caesar didn't rise again. There's no way I was going to say Caesar is Lord. Well, that was okay for a lot of people in the church, but I was the leader, so they wanted to make an example of me, and now I'm here on Patmos, but don't feel too bad for me. Yeah, it's hot. It's uncomfortable. I find myself on a part of the island where there's not a lot of people, but you know what? I'm not alone. God is with me. And the funny thing, I know a purpose and a meaning and a joy and a peace I never knew. When I was fighting with James and Peter to be great among Jesus' followers. Well, back then I thought that was purpose. Be in control. Position of authority. I could hardly wait. I thought Jesus was going to give us political freedom. We wouldn't have to pay taxes. The money would roll in. That was purpose. I'm so glad with his truth, and over time, God's changed me. Now I know his purpose. You've got this with. That's what it's about, you know. God just wants to be with us. Everything Jesus came to do was so that we could be with him. And you know what? Power, control, money, that's so temporary. This with, that's forever. You know, I know. God told me. Here on Patmos, one thing I've got is time. And in that time, as I prayed, God has shown me so much. I've had these amazing visions. An angel told me to write them down. I hear they still have them today, and you have them. I just thought that'd be kind of cool. I'd probably call it revelations. I don't know what you call it. Anyway, one of my last ones. One of the last visions in all those he gave me was about a wedding. And it was about this wedding banquet, this wedding feast that would bring in all of eternity for those who were with God. And is there a better symbol of relationship, of being brought with, than a wedding? And Jesus was the bridegroom, and he made all the preparations. And not only is it with him, but in my culture, you want to talk joy? We knew how to throw a wedding, let me tell you. That's the end game. That's God's purpose, that we be with him and know life with him forever. But I'm here to talk with you about a story that happened earlier that makes that vision possible. It's actually a story about another wedding and another wedding feast. It was one of my first times that I'd been with Jesus for any amount of time. He hadn't even called me and James and Peter to follow him yet. That would still come. We were checking him out. You see, strange things have been happening. It was actually Andrew, Peter's brother, friend of mine. He'd heard about this guy named John, not me, another John. Weird guy. You think I dress funny? Guy wore like camel skin. What he ate locusts. But he had this message. He said, the Messiah is coming. Now, in my day, Messiah was code for everything God was going to do. Except we didn't quite have it right. We thought God was all about giving us, as our Jewish nation, political freedom, that God would get rid of the Romans. At least in our area, we didn't really care about the rest. And we'd be free, and we wouldn't have to pay taxes. And could this Jesus that he said was the Messiah be the Messiah? Andrew thought so. We were checking him out. Well, Jesus had come up North Shore of Galilee where I fished. And word came to him. His mom was in Cana, kind of a little bit west. And there's a wedding there. She was relative of the bridegroom. And thing with Jewish weddings, the more the merrier. Okay? Jesus' mom thought it'd be nice for Jesus and his friends to be there. So he talked to Salome, the bridegroom's mother, and she said, why not? So she got word to us in Capernaum to come to the wedding. What would you rather do? Fish in the heat? Or have a holiday for a week? Jesus said, let's go to a wedding, let's go to a wedding. And away we went. So we get to Cana. Well, I'll spare you the details about the ceremony. But boy, the wedding feast, like I said, we know how to throw a wedding. Okay? I hear you only have like one night party. You poor people. We'd party for a week. And this wedding, oh, they spared no expense. They hired a great banquet master. That guy, he knew food. Don't tell my mom. I think that lamb was better than hers. And the wine flowed freely. It always does. Wine is a symbol of celebration and joy, and it's just expected. There's going to be wine for the whole wedding. And, well, it was, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 days in. And I'd been kind of looking for an opportunity the whole time just to have a good chat with Mary, with Jesus' mom. After all, I was checking out Jesus, right? And I heard rumors that when he was born, there was some weird stuff happening. I wanted to get it from her. So I see her. She's over here, kind of, this is where the food was getting ready. I think she was going over to talk with Salome, bridegroom's mom, and I saw her alone. So I'm getting over and working up the courage to ask some questions, and out comes Salome. And she's frantic. She's looking like she came from Patmos. She says to Mary, 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 we got a problem. Can you keep a secret? Oh, Mary says, I think so. Salome, her face is just panic. She says, I just heard from a servant and they just sent the last wine. We're out. We got a day or so to go. We're out of wine. Well, I can't tell you how embarrassing that would be in our culture. I asked your pastor. He thought a bit. He said, well, let me, and he gave me this scenario I didn't understand. He wrote it down. He said, it's like hockey. I didn't know what hockey was. You play on ice? Oh, well. Then he said something about, it's like the Oilers in the hockey playoffs. Don't know what that is. That must be weird. And he said, they're in the playoffs, and you invite a bunch of people to your acreage to watch the game on your big screen. Okay, whatever that is, you with me? Okay. Then he said, while you're there, the satellite breaks down. No cable or interweb. You know what that's about? And no cell reception, so no way to get the game. Well, I had a pretty blank face on my look on my face, so this hockey stuff confuses me. He said, well, it's like this big deal, and you invite everyone to come out for the big deal, and you can't deliver. And I said, that's it. That's it. The wedding banquet's a big deal. The wine flowing's a big deal. You don't run out of wine. They're running out of wine. So I'm over there where I can hear, and Mary says, let me handle it. Let her handle it. Been around her for 4 days. I don't see a hidden wine cache anywhere. Then she said, I'll talk to Jesus. Jesus. I didn't see him carrying extra wine from Cana. He's like a carpenter. What's he supposed to do? Build a wine press? We don't have time for that. So she says to Jesus, they're running out of wine. Now, she said it in a way. You don't need to be too smart. Jesus, they're running out of wine. She didn't say it, but do something. What's he supposed to do? Wine out of nowhere? Turn some water into wine? Well, this got weird. Jesus said, woman. Now, not exactly disrespectful. But it's not the way you talk to your mom. And it's not the way I'd ever seen Jesus talk to his mom, and it's not the way I would talk to my mom. Woman. That was weird. Then he said, why do you involve me? That's the only thing I'd heard in a while that made sense. Why do you involve him? He doesn't have wine. Then he said, my hour has not yet come. What on earth was that about? My hour has not yet come. Well, it would take a few years for me to get that one all together. But I heard him say it quite a bit more. Let me give you the journey, because I think it'll help you understand what I've come to understand. The next time I would hear him say it was a year or so later. We're in the temple courts in Jerusalem. Jesus is talking with religious leaders, and he's making some pretty strong claims. An out and out saying he's Messiah, but it's close. And they're not happy. This is like blasphemy. This could mean stoning. And they call the temple guards. But the funniest thing, like, Jesus wasn't big. But it's like the temple guards froze and he walked right out. He said, my hour's not yet come. A little while later, back in the temple, Pharisees asking him again. He makes stronger claims. I am one with the Father. I could sense the rocks flying again. Just when I thought they'd arrest him, everyone freezes. He walks out. My hour has not yet come. Then I heard him switch it to my hour has come. You know the first time I heard that? It was the day of that week he went to the cross, the first day of the week. You've heard the story, right? He entered Jerusalem on a donkey. People put the palm branches. Again, for those of us thinking God would send a Messiah as a king to get rid of Rome, to get us back in our own little independent area on the map, this was big. Because this coming into Jerusalem on a donkey, we had prophecies about this, and we were sure this was it. Now he would start to gather an army. And all the power we thought was part of his purpose. And after he's in, he says, "Now my hour has come," and we thought the hour would be a throne. Then he does it again. Talking about dying. And instead of rallying troops and marching on Pilate's palace, says, let's go out of the city again. My hour has come and you're doing nothing? And then there was that Thursday. We had a strange Passover meal. Jesus washed our feet, gave us bread and wine, called it his body and his blood. Talked again how he would be leaving us. We walked to that garden where he prayed. It was on the way to the garden. He prayed for us. You know how he started that prayer? "Now my hour has come." And within a few hours, he hung on a cross. Now it makes sense. His hour was the cross. I was there. In the temple, it wasn't time yet. Coming into Jerusalem, he knew the throne was a cross. The events were unfolding, and that night as he went to the garden, he knew the hour would end as he gave his life. What did it have to do with a banquet? "My hour has not yet come." Here's what's strange. Does that not sound like "I'm not going to do anything, Mom"? Then he went and he did something about the wine. "So my hour has not yet come." You know what I think? I think he was distancing himself from his mom. I think he was saying, "I'm not doing this to save some embarrassment. I'm doing this because I've come to earth for a different purpose. It's going to end on a cross, and what I'm about to do is symbolic." You see, he wanted the bridegroom feast with us forever, but that meant at this feast a symbol of what that would cost. A symbol of why he came. "No, my hour has come." He did not do what he did in this whole water to wine thing because of the embarrassment of a bridegroom's mother. He did it because of the mission he was on. And so he starts to move back toward the place of preparation. I'm sure his mom is going, "What's he going to do?" But she's been confused by him before. She says to the servants, just do whatever he tells you to do. Did I say it's been getting weird? It's getting weirder. Okay, across the street, nearby, there's a synagogue. And there's these stone jars at the synagogue, big, big jars. These weren't any jars. The reason they're made out of stone is the water had to be pure. We didn't use clay. We thought clay would catch the impurities. So they're cut out of stone. The water in those jars was poured over dishes, over utensils, over hands. If they were at all thought unclean, so they'd be clean. Sometimes they poured it into a little pool, and people who wanted to be purified would be immersed. This water was all about making the unclean clean. You didn't drink this water. That's why when Jesus said, fill the jars with water, it had nothing to do with our religion. It's like the wrong people find out what he's doing, he's in trouble. That never seemed to worry Jesus too much. So the servants, they just had Mary say, do what he says. They did it. They filled the jars to the brim. Then he says, take some out, put it in a cup, take it to the banquet master. Water. A banquet master, his job is to taste the next batch of wine. This is going to get interesting. We watched. It was Mary, Salome, and I had gotten the other guys, servants, take a ladle in that jar. When they pour it in the cup, it's not clear anymore. It's like ruby red. Could it be? Well, the servant, now he's got to go to the banquet master. We're following. Gives it to the master. Master looks at it, takes a drink, gets this really funny furrow in his brow. I'm thinking, uh-oh, busted. Red water. But then he smiles. And he says, this is the best wine of the week. This is among the best wine I've ever tasted. He's not stupid. He knows. You serve the best wine first when people can still taste it. You know what I mean? This is the best wine. Oh, it was a miracle. But you know my biggest memory of the day? See, once the banquet master declared the wine ready, it was poured into cups and everyone took a drink and Jesus had his cup and I happened to be watching as he drank. Oh, most of the people there totally oblivious. They didn't know what had happened. I did. And everyone else, they're smiling, they're partying for Jesus. There was this look, a very serious look. Kind of a faraway look. This represented the hour. That's why of all the ways he could have done the miracle, those jars, they were all about making the unclean clean, but they could only wash our hands and our plates. They could only wash the outside. And in our problem in being with God was not an outside problem. It was a sin problem. We needed the inside cleaned. Jesus knew for that to happen, there would have to be a coming hour when he hung on a cross. All that sin on him. So that we could be clean on the inside. And so I watched as he drank. And I was there when he died, and they put the two together. Oh, he drank willingly the cost of our sin, that we might drink deeply the reality of forgiveness, the reality of life with him. That's what this miracle was about. A miracle at one wedding feast so there could be a real wedding feast forever where we're with him. He drank that cup right to the cross and simply invites us now to drink the cup of forgiveness. I hope you have. Oh, one of my favorite things Jesus said. I wrote it in one of my other books. He was talking to someone. He said, God, he loves the world. That's why he sent me. So if you believe me, you can have life with me. Forever. I hope you've drunk from that cup. Not, you better check it out. But I have a feeling a lot of you here, you know that forgiveness. Funny thing about the cup, sometimes we sip. And we think there's other cups of life, of purpose. Back to when I was jockeying for position. If I can just have a cup of authority, a cup of power, a cup of lots of stuff, a cup of pleasure. I'm on Patmos. Those cups are nowhere around. But I drink deeply and daily of the presence of Jesus. It's his purpose, you know. So we could live forgiven, restored with him forever. What better cup to drink than life with him? Jesus drank willingly the cost of our sin, that we might drink deeply the reality of forgiveness and life with him. Drink up. Drink deeply.
Stand and join us in worship.
I'm forgiven, 'cause you were forsaken. I'm accepted, you were condemned. And I'm alive and well, your spirit is within me. Because you died and rose again. Amazing love, how can it be? that you, my King, would die for me. Amazing love, I know it's true, and it's my joy to honor you in all I do. I honor you, and I'm forgiven because you were forsaken. I'm accepted, you were condemned. I'm alive and well, your spirit is within me, because you died and rose again. Amazing love, how can it be that you, my King, would die for me? Amazing love, I know it's true, and it's my joy to honor you.